Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Drop the Needle podcast. I'm your host, Jim Allstott. And as always, I'm so glad you all decided to join us. Well, I've got something a little different for this episode, episode 29. In this episode, we have Mr. Joe McQuillan, and Joe is a one-of-a-kind individual, and the length of the episode went a little bit longer than normal, so instead of it being super, super long in one sitting, I've decided to break it up into two parts, so it's a little bit easier for everyone to get through, because he's got so much information that is so good. I think it's important that everyone gets to see it. So, without further ado, we're going to start part one of episode 29 with Mr. Joe McQuillan.
Welcome to the Drop the Needle podcast, your backstage pass to the corporate jungle. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and here, industry titans step up to the mic, sharing their epic journeys. We're hitting the high notes and the low notes of their careers, creating a symphony of success. This isn't just another interview show, it's where truth bombs are dropped and secrets are revealed. So grab your conductor's baton, because who knows, this just might help you compose the next huge hit of your career. Are you ready? Let's go.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Drop the Needle podcast. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and I'm so happy you all decided to join us. Today, we have as our guest an author, a musician, a railroad man, a business owner, cigar aficionado, a golfer, a dad, and an all-around great guy. We have Joe McQuillan. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for the warm welcome. You know, my old man used to say, a jack of all trades and a master of none. And so... You know, I'm on Earth school just like you, just trying to figure my way, you know.
I think we're
really grateful
okay.
to be here.
Oh, thank you for coming on the show. Well, I mean, I mentioned to you before we started how excited I was about this, because I met Joe. Well, as I said, I didn't really meet Joe. I was in a Zoom session with Joe as the guest, and that was with Jen Weigel Spiritual Social Club about a year ago. Yeah. And in November, the first weekend in November, I had the opportunity to meet Joe in person, as he was a speaker at the All Souls Retreat up in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. And it was just a wonderful experience. And for anyone who has just a little bit of curiosity about that, I suggest you go next year. It's just a fantastic event.
100%.
So, Joe, as I mentioned, is an author, and he wrote a book with his son, Christopher. The first one, he actually has written two, and as I understand, he's on his third right now, or they are on their third.
We are. Yeah.
Yep. They're on their third book together, and I would like
if it's okay, Joe, if you could start out with your story and your background.
Sure. So in December of 2015, my boy was home from school. I live on the North Shore of Chicago. They were all new career kids, all off in school. And they it was the last weekend before school started again. And so they were home for 15. And so in January 16, last couple of days, they decided to go up to a friend's lake house up in Lake Beulah, Wisconsin, which is about, less than an hour from our house or close to it. And a dozen of them were just going to go and guys and gals kick up their heels, play a little pool, drink a little bit too much. And I wasn't all that concerned because, they were in a small community. They weren't driving anywhere. They were all in one spot. And the next day, they were all spending the night and he was coming home. And I grew up in Buffalo and he is a huge Buffalo Bills fan, as is my son, Will, Christopher's little brother. So we were waiting for him to come home so we could watch the game. And it's kind of a religious thing with the McQuillans when it comes to the Buffalo Bills. It was approaching. I was texting. I'm going, buddy, where are you? We're getting ready. What do you want me to order for lunch? That kind of thing. And a little while later, I got a text from the young man who parents owned the lake house and said, Mr. McHugh, Chris and four friends are missing. Chris and three friends are missing. So I had him text me the address. And I grabbed the Labrador, who's in heaven now, and jumped in the Jeep with hunting boots and winter jacket, and drove up, Jim, anticipating to find him in a boathouse with a pretty co-ed or somebody else's couch or whatever.
Right.
This wasn't my first rodeo with my spirited child. And halfway up, I got a phone call, and it was from the lad who owns, the parents own the house, his brother, the uncle who lived in the area, who said, Mr. McQuillan, it's no longer a search but a recovery. All four boys drowned, you kind of go blank, you go into shock a little bit but I'm kind of a blue collar kid and there were things to do and so I went up there and to this day, I'm looking out of the room that I'm in was Christopher's bedroom. It's my office at home. And I look out a window here, and I could just envision walking in that door and seeing a picture window behind with the boats on the lake with the lights going, and there were divers, and there were other things going on. And in one corner were a bunch of kids crying, and other corners were a bunch of shocked parents. And I just kind of skirted it all and, talked to the sheriff. And a coroner, and they need me to identify a picture in Wisconsin in order to identify bodies, But one thing that did happen to me, Jim, that kind of put me on this path, and a path that I don't look like I'd be on. I got a brush cut and kind of a bent nose. before you and I spoke, I lit some sage and aligned my chakras. Like you, I've got some mala beads and a bit of a spiritual bent, but a number of years before, I had seen a medium kind of just on a 15 years before. I don't know if it was a lark now I know it was a connect the dots type thing, but at the time, and the reading was kind of mundane until I got to my old man who said, there's a railroad lantern behind my head. And she said, your dad's here and he's holding a caboose and telling you railroad. He spent 40 years on the railroad. Every boy in the family worked on the railroad. I was a brakeman on the railroad in my youth. And I just put that away in my mental filing cabinet and figured, and that's something, that's pretty interesting. Right. And driving up, I thought, wait a minute, if my old man somewhere that was able to connect and tell me things that nobody knew, this reading was in 2000 before the internet. My old man was just a good, hardworking union guy, loving, nickname was Iron Joe, but his trials and tribulations would not have been on the internet, even if there was one.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way that this person could have known this information. So driving up, I thought, okay, wait a minute. If my old man's somewhere, then my son's with him. You know, that's how we roll. Mm-hmm. We were very close, 10 kids, big family, kind of a convoluted story, but, you know, family was always first and second. And so I thought, okay, I just got to get my stuff together here, make it through this, and then try to figure that out. And that put me on a journey of, and I approached it, Jim, kind of like you, I assume, that let's keep going forward. And if this is all metaphysical nonsense, let's just take it off the list and figure out another way to deal with my grief, right?
Right.
And didn't much care about what anybody thought about the journey. I needed to, you know, family first, right? I needed mm-hmm. to find out where Chris went after he drowned in that cold lake, you know? And it was a perfect storm for the boys, Jim. It was, you know, partially frozen lake. They had a snoot full of alcohol, the bravado of a 21-year-old, layered clothing, yeah. Untied Timberland boots, you know? And step by step, you know, when this was all coming to fruition, I kept moving forward. And what that meant is how I met you was, you know, attending a medium sponsored by Jen Weigel, you know, at the mm-hmm. Wilmette Theater and this and that. And Christopher come booming through in almost every one of those situations, especially early on. And the only time he doesn't come through in those settings is when somebody needs to come through more than he does, right? Hmm. And so that was my path. My path was that my son was somewhere. I wanted to connect, and I wanted to find out what's next and what that means. And where that leads is just fine, you know, but where it doesn't is fine too, you know. So
right.
that started it.
Man.
Yeah.
I know the story, and every time I hear it, I can't imagine, number one, reliving that as many times as you have over the years in sharing that story and the vulnerability and the pain and everything else that goes on. That it just freaking hits me.
You know what, Jimmy, one thing is important to understand is that, you know, sharing Christopher's messages, and we'll get into what those messages mm-hmm. are, you know, gives me air to breathe, right? It gives me air to breathe. It allows me to be of service. And you know, it's funny because people like Jen said, hey, is Sally coming up? My amazing wife. She's a therapist. First book's coming out in April. And is she coming out to All Souls? And I said, you know, no. And she probably hasn't seen more than one or two of interviews that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because she doesn't want to relive it every time.
Right.
You know, I do it for a reason. You know, I'm not. Yeah. And when she would send me excerpts of her book, or when she gave me the complete book to read, I mean, it ripped me apart, you know, but filled my soul the same way. But, you know, but I think the importance of giving the message supersedes the pain. And the truth of the matter is, pain's with you all the time.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
You know, and there's it was a great line from a movie called Manchester by the Sea, where the woman lost some children. And she said, you know, my heart is broken. It'll always be broken. Right. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I don't have a full life. I have two other kids. I got Christmas coming up. I was golfing with friends. I work. I do, you know, I write. I have this amazing life. But I go through life with a piece of my heart broken off. And any parent who lost a child has, you know, there's a, you know, people mm-hmm. say that, I always say when I'm talking that anyone who says time heals all wounds never lost a child.
Right. Because
it'll never heal.
Right, you know, right.
It'll heal the minute I cross over and I'm with my boy. Yeah. You know, that's when my soul will be completely healed.
Have that peace back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that to be true early on. So my my mom's parents lost a child shortly after high school graduation who was going to seminary. He was planning on going to seminary school, my uncle Eddie. Yeah. And actually, my dad was the one who had to identify the body because my grandparents were out of town. And I remember my grandparents saying, no parent should outlive their child. And it happened to them twice because my mom passed unexpectedly and as a result of a car accident. So I know that from hearing it from them. I don't know it personally.
Right.
And so I apologize for saying this, but thank you, Lord, for not.
No, I'm glad you don't. I don't want anybody to, you know, I don't wish this on anybody. And I tell people all the time, Jim, we'll talk about this. I have this connection with Christopher. I get messages from Christopher. And to this day, you know, but the truth of the matter is I would have preferred being abysmally ignorant and opening presents with him on Christmas morning and having no knowledge of the metaphysical.
Yeah.
But that's not the path. That's not the deal. As I got deeper into this, you know, there's soul contracts and there's free will. And there's, you know, so much information that goes into. My boy wasn't meant to live longer than he lived. And the people, the amazing thing is he had touched so many people. There were 2,000 people at his wake.
Oh, my gosh.
He was just one of those. He looked like Brad Pitt. He was gorgeous. He was always a champion.
He's on the cover
underdog.
Of your first book.
Yeah, both of them.
Yeah, right.
And he's a champion of the underdog, you know, wouldn't tolerate bullies, you know, party boy, fun athlete.
Off the old block.
Yeah, he was a lot better looking and a better athlete than his old man, you know. But he, he just had that way about him. And he touched a lot of people. And we heard a lot of stories after he was gone from friends. One woman reached out to my wife, and Sally was at her college grad school graduation, who said that she was at a party in college and in a room and considering whether to continue with her life or not. And Chris walked in and sat down, and she was deciding whether to come out and let people know that she was gay, and she was wrestling with that. And Chris walked in and spent the party with her and said, "We love you. Nobody cares about your sexuality. None of it." And she said, "You know, that changed the course of my life." You know, there was we came back from a cruise 2 years, two Christmases before he left us. And I'm making a roast. We're going to have a family roast for Christmas dinner. He said, "Dad, I got to go." He said, "One of my fraternity brothers," and these are blue collar kids, just like me. You know, they weren't spoiled kids and wonderful kids. He said, "One of the kids, something happened at home, and he's alone at the fraternity house." And so I said, we whipped a plate together, went to Walgreens and got a, you know, fragrance kit or something, wrapped it up. Mm-hmm. And Jim, half the time I'm wondering, is this kid conning me? Is there a kegger going on somewhere?
Am I missing here?
Yeah. Is this a bit of a con, or is this going on? And so we wrapped up a, you know, big meal for him, and they took it back. And at his wake, a kid walked up and said, "Mr. McQuillan, I just want to tell you a story." And he told the story about him being the kid that was left alone at Christmas in DeKalb. And not only did Chris come, but he rallied a number of friends. And they all went there for Christmas night.
That's cool.
And had Christmas with this kid. You know, so that's the kind of kid he was. You know, it's like, you know.
He sounds like a great guy.
He was a handful, buddy. He was a handful. But what a wonderful kid. So the amazing amount of people that he touched here. And then since his crossing over, the amazing amount of people that he's been able to touch, you know, and that's our mission. That's mine and his, you know. And I live my life two ways, Jim. I think I mentioned this when I was speaking, you know. I live my life now to please my God and to make my son proud, you know. And if I can follow those two tenets, then I'm going to be just okay. I'll be just fine, you know. I'll be good.
I think you're doing better than fine.
Yeah, I do too.
You're something. And forgive me along the way if I if I have a moment where it hits me, like Chip, or, like right Chip. Now.
Yeah, I do too. What do you, you know, I keep a golf towel handy.
Oh, that's so smart. I got to start doing that.
I keep a golf towel right here, you know. God. Keep it on my lap.
Damn know. It. Why didn't you tell me that ahead of time?
You got to have a golf towel accessible. And you know, this, and it happens pretty much every time. And I start, when I'm speaking to groups, I'll say, excuse me, if I take a moment, you know, I happen to share my father's sentimentality, you know, and Chris was sensitive and sweet. And you know, so I'll tell you, you know, the first, I the woman from 15 years before, Jim, that medium, and she had moved to Arizona. I reached out to her after all that time, ran her down, and she said, you know, it's pretty new, but let me see if I can do it. And then she told me things that I wouldn't find out on paper until I got the coroner's report. No. So he was able to come through, and he described heaven, and he decided the speed of things and the colors of things, and he would say, Pop, you know, the air, it's never cold here, the air is warm, but it's love and air, it's like love air, you know, the pinks and the greens are like colors you've never seen. So I had a couple of sessions with her, and then I got greedy, you know, and I think, I hope your listeners key in on this. I got greedy. I wanted to do a reading in person with a medium who was watching my kid. I wanted somebody that was clairvoyant, you know, claircognizant, clairconscious, all the clairs, right? And so I looked up a guy. He was in Arlington Heights, about 30 minutes away. And he had done some work for the police department, done the, you know, and I looked him up off of a website. And there was a private investigator in L.A. who wrote a really good book called Evidence of the Afterlife. And it turns out it was his website. I didn't realize until I was writing the book. And I went out and saw, so I made an appointment with this guy. And you know, I'm an escape route guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, gave him my first name, didn't tell him anything. He said, bring some pictures of whoever you're trying to reach. I said, fine. Now, that day, the day before, some shamrocks had arrived. Now, maybe this will tell you a little bit about me, Jim. And Christopher actually commented, man, that's so you, Dad. That we buried Christopher on January 8th, 2016, middle of winter, frozen ground.
Yeah.
You know, we bought a number of graves. And when the snow melted, he was buried next to another couple. And I was livid. You know, it's like, this is my kid, nobody else's. Now, the gravestone hadn't been put down because they can't do that until the ground is soft. So in June, when the ground softened up, I moved him over one plot. Now, I'll occupy the plot that he was in. As a matter of fact, my Labrador, Cassidy, who was, you know, Christopher's, you know, just adored each other. She's in that. She's in that spot right now. Don't tell Sacred Heart Cemetery. I went there with a spade. But went there with a spade and just decided, instead of me and Chris, me and Casey,
10 o'clock Cassidy, at night.
Yeah, it was. Under the moon. Figure, if I got away with all the stuff I've got away with all my life, I'm not going to get caught for this one. So I moved Chris over one grave. And so the ground was still loose. I had ordered some shamrock seeds because I wanted, and shamrocks still come up through right around the edges of his grave. And so I planted those. And then before I left the house, I this is a bracelet Chris gave me when he was about five at Disney World. It says Pop on it. And it's got a logo of Goofy, which might be an indication, you know, of who I am.
Personality.
My personality. Yeah. So I had picked that out of, it had been sitting in my jewelry box for, you know, 15 years. And so I for some reason, dug it out and put it under my cuff. And went out and saw this guy. And the first thing this guy, Andrew, said, he said, look, you know, your son's here. He's beautiful. God, he looks like Brad Pitt. He said, but your family was together last night, you know, celebrating something you guys didn't celebrate. And I said, well, that was our wedding anniversary, which you don't celebrate 6 months after you buried your child.
Right, right.
You know, he said, but your family did on the other side. And he said, I just want you to know that Christopher, there were moments he didn't want to be here on earth. You know, there was, and we knew we wrestled with depression and alcohol and,
right,
you know, all the things that you try to self-medicate when you're going through. Mm-hmm. And he said, but Christopher acknowledges that you were at a grave planting something and that you're wearing the bracelet he gave you, which was under a cot. That was the moment, Jim, I went from believing. I've been on a journey for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I went from believing to knowing. I knew then that Christopher was on the other side. Christopher had the ability to connect, to communicate, to be with me, and just that kicked it into higher gear. You know, I had seen four or five amazing mediums in groups and everything up until that point. And this is the first time I was one-on-one, and I have every single one of them recorded, and they're in the book. You know, mm-hmm. the first book,
yes.
My Search for Christopher on the Other Side. But that was that aha moment when you go, okay, it's no longer I wonder, I think, I hope. It's real. This is it. You know, they're just on the other side. They're just across, a rice paper wall from one room to the other. You know, all we've got to do is, you know, I was with Jen I think it was a woman at the theater. And during a Q&A, a woman said, you know, my sister and I, she was twins. We've been twins. We were twins and very close. And she's been gone 4 years and I haven't heard anything from her. She was a little defensive, you know, mm-hmm. arms crossed. And I just said, you know, well, what have you done, darling? What have you done to enhance the connection? You know,
right.
Do you meditate? Do you find a quiet place? Do you look out thin places where you guys connected? You know, is there anything you do? Have you aligned your chakras? You know, I have two things, and your listeners are welcome. My email, by the way, is jbmcquillan@gmail.com. And if anybody wants, you know, A, to communicate, and B, I have, a chakra chart, and I've got steps to connect.
I think
are very helpful.
Yeah.
When trying to connect with somebody on the other side, just little tips, things I picked up along the way. None of this is novel or new. You know,
right.
I love when they call this new age, right?
Exactly.
New age. Rumi, 12th century poet, said, goodbyes are for those who love with their eyes, for those who love with their heart and soul. There's no such thing as separation. That's the 12th century. That's how new age this is.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. I think it's just hilarious.
Just because we're doing an awakening doesn't make it new, you know?
Right. Yeah, it might be new to that individual, but the practice certainly isn't
new to society or the earth or the world.
No, not at
or
all.
Or the soul.
Right, right, exactly. So I know it's been a little while, but can you describe the feeling the first time you and Christopher connected after his passing?
Well, the first time, literally, it started Nancy Myers, who was the medium. She's an author, lovely gal. I met with her a couple times. I'd gone out and done a documentary out in Phoenix, and we went and had lunch and hung out. That was the first time. But I will tell you, on the time that I think you're talking about was, you know, I had mediums telling me what Chris is saying.
Mm-hmm.
And in November of the first year of 16, I was at one of the guys I was talking about, Alan Conrad. We've been friends since 1971, Bishop Time in high school in South Buffalo. And we've been best friends ever since. We've survived the loss of his wife, the loss of my son, my alcoholism, you know, mm-hmm. Which I said, I'm in recovery 39 years now. And we were together last weekend in Florida with a couple other boys, the guys. And so I went to his wedding and I'm famous for the Irish goodbye. Nobody leaves a party the way I do. It's like, I'm just gone. Right.
And I've got a friend who does that.
It's
Michael
a God-given,
Shannon.
Right? It's, yes. Irish, it's a yes. God-given gift, right? My wife said, how do you do it? I want to try it. I go, it's not for you. You make eye contact. You say goodbye to people. You're
moonwalking out, so it
yeah,
looks
you
like
just gotta, you just got to go. Somebody,
right.
They snap the ball and you're gone. And and so I'd done that at his wedding after a wonderful wedding and ended up on a beach in Sarasota. The first night, I think I was in Lido Key, the second in Siesta Key. And I was walking on the beach just to connect with Chris and feel a little sorry for myself or whatever. Mm-hmm. Smoking a cigar with a pant leg khakis rolled up to my calves. And I just felt this overwhelming rush of energy come through me. And I knew Christopher was there, and I started to cry like ball, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was significant. And then on the anniversary was crossing, January 3rd, 2017, I'm in this office. And I had started coming in here. I would get woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, and it was before I had to start getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to pee all the time.
Right.
It was just, you know, something woke me up. And I'd come in here, and I'd meditate, and I'd light sage, and I'd feel them. And I'd love that. You know, on January 3rd, 2017, I came in, was going through my routine, and I got, I started getting downloads from them. Literally, it's like somebody talking into your ear, like in a mic that you're transcribing, right? And he was talking about heaven, and he's talking about what it was like, and he was talking about, and you couldn't believe the colors and how magnificent and how wonderful it is. And then he said to me, this is really significant. He said, you know, you got to let go of the anger with Scotty Pop. It wasn't his fault. He was my pal. We loved each other. You know, holding on to that's not going to help anything. Now, you got to remember, you know, prior to all this, I had two emotions. There was anger and anger. You know, that's how I dealt with every situation, right? And I bullied my way through most of my life, you know, probably alienating a lot of people. But, you know, so I was angry. I, you know, if I could have sued these people for, you know, having an unlocked boathouse and, you know, and or unlimited drugs or alcohol, you know, I would have. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that, you know, kids came over to my house, you know, Christopher's friends, you know, there was beer and sandwiches and, you know, it's not, you know, I wasn't exactly a the lord of discipline. You know, so, but I need to be mad at somebody. So I was mad at Scotty and his parents. And so he said, you got to let go of it, Pop, you know. And so I said, sure, Chris, for you, I'll do anything. And I also thought, Jim, when am I ever going to see Scotty again, right?
Right.
12 hours later, I get a text from some of his fraternity buddies. And said, Mr. McHugh, we're all going to meet at the grave at 3:00. You know, can you swing by? So I grabbed the hockey cooler, threw some beer and some Gatorade, grabbed a box of cigars, you know, figured hang out there with 6 or 7 guys and just honor my boy. And I pull up and the friggin' parking lot is like circular parking lot. It's full. And it's like kids were getting out of the cars like clown cars, right?
Yeah.
There were 40 kids at his grave. You know, they got that coconut telegraph going and they all met there. And we were out there for hours, and we do that to this day on the anniversary, by the way. And one of the first kids I saw was Scotty, you know. And so Chris was preparing me for the fact that I had to be ready. And I had to embrace him and say, Scotty, it wasn't your fault. It could have been at my house. It could have been at somebody else's house. You know, Chris loved you. We love you, you know. And I knew then, you know, that these messages weren't a salve to put on my broken heart, you know, mm-hmm. that these messages were real messages. And a lot of them have to do with service to people who've lost kids. Or, you know, I'm a little, it's not all about losing kids, it's about losing someone significant, right? Someone you love, you know, life partners, you know, spouses, you know, it all matters. You know, there's another level with children. And I will tell you, there's another level with parents. And I've talked to one parent extensively at the All Souls meeting. Parents who have kids who've taken their own lives, right? There's another level of pain or of responsibility that's undeserved. They don't earn it. Right. But there's another level that said, I should be able to stop this.
There's
another level of guilt. Right. Yeah. And I, to this day, I still, why didn't I stop him from going to the lake house? He was talking about double dating. I should have offered to buy the dinner. There's a lot of things we go through. But, you know, the reality is it's a bell. January 3rd, 2016 was a bell that cannot be unrun. It's there. Now, Joe, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah. You know,
and more. Now Joe and Chris. Now Chris and Joe, because, you know, he's the one driving this bus. You know, I'm just a scribe, you know.
Yeah, man. Did you, and I know how, because having met you, having read your books, and I say read, and I'm an Audible guy, you know.
So am I. They're both on audible.com.
Yeah, I love them. Love them, by the
Me
way.
Me too. Me too.
Absolutely love them.
I'm an Audible guy. I'll read on an airplane or laying around the pool.
Yep,
but other than that, too. I'm in my Jeep listening to them.
Yeah, I do the same. And right now, so Jen Weigel has been my number one author. Yeah. And I actually showed her at one of the events that she had. But you're really close.
Thanks,
you're really close right now.
I'm in good company.
Well, I'll tell you. Yeah, you are quickly becoming one of my favorite authors, and I can't wait for the next one. But
yeah,
I know the answer to this, having heard, but I'm going to ask this question,
sure,
because I'm sure someone out there is going to wonder this. Have you ever experienced any moments of doubt regarding the messages you received?
No. Early on, I mean, initially, I thought I left the reservation. Early on, I was like, right. Okay, great.
Right.
This
right.
is great. Not only have I lost my kid, I'm losing my friggin' mind. And I very early, probably the first interview I did, Jim, was a radio station in Dallas. And the woman said, you know, what do you tell people that just don't buy it? I said, tell them to change the channel. I don't care.
Exactly.
I care exactly. so deeply, but I care for people who need this, want this message, right?
Right.
Who are looking for answers. I mean, if you've closed your mind and decided none of this is real, good luck to you. You know, yeah. when, you know, there was a big time shock jock here in Chicago, and I did an interview with him. And he said, you know, he seemed like a really good guy. And he said, no, you know, he said, he's funny. He goes, you know, I don't want to hurt your feelings. You seem like a tough guy. I go, I'm tough enough, you know.
Right.
He said, you get a thick skin when you've been through something like this, you know. And he said, you know, I just don't, you know, buy it. I said, you know, you don't have to, but all I'm going to ask you, do me a favor. Just keep this in the back of your mind, because someday you're going to need this message.
Right.
And then put it on recall. You know, and if you need to, then if I'm still walking this earth, give me a call and I'll help you any way I can. So at some point in time, Jim, everybody's going to need this message. And I've done a lot of research, you know, and there's plenty of times people come through the other side and say, dang, I was just wrong. You know, this stuff
right.
is real and it's great and it's yeah. amazing. And tell people, you know, ignore everything I said to them, you know.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, I came from a big Irish family, Catholic, close, dysfunctional, wonderful. And so what really helps, and me in a position where I'm, you know, kind of an advocate for, you know, believing in the other side and mm-hmm. dropping the rock and allowing yourself to feel and hurt, you know, and I was having coffee with a friend of mine's cousin, and she asked that question about, you know, what do you think about people who think you've lost it? I said, that's God bless them. That's okay.
Right, right.
And she said, you have the unassailable self-confidence that comes from a childhood insulated with love. And so all of these were building blocks. I was loved as a child. Now, you know, I wasn't always, you know, my behavior wasn't always appropriate and wasn't always condoned. But I right. never doubted the love, right? It's the way yeah. it should be. You know, if you're acting outside the lines, you should be held accountable. But I knew I was loved. So when I got on this project, it was like, if anybody outside the realm of people hurting because of loss judges me, I don't care.
Right.
Doesn't matter a lick to me, you know? You know, if people look at, oh, yeah, that guy wrote, it means nothing to me, you know? What means is I'm being of service. I'm helping people who just don't know what to do with the burden, and lifting maybe the veil that says it's not over.
Right.
It's nowhere near as good. It's a yeah. bad trade. Horrible deal. Horrible right. trade. Right. Bad trade.
But it's something.
But it's so much better than nothing.
Right.
Than
it is
thinking
something.
It's gone. And I never question it. I never doubt it. You know, I go back and when I'll have these messages with Chris, And he talked about Thanksgiving, the last download we had together. The Thanksgivings when I was out in Tucson to visit him when he was in boarding school. And Thanksgiving, we were kids and football games. And I'd forgotten half of this stuff, you know. And so that's always, there's always evidence that none of this. And by the way, the very first meeting, I wasn't ready to let go of my resentment with Scotty. I wanted to hold on to it, right? So that's why I know none of these are me. Because half the time it's contrary to what I think or I think I know or believe.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, when I get these things, I'll go through them and then I put them in a file cabinet. And then it's only a couple years later, I'm writing about them in chronological order in the book. And I'm amazed at some of the messages, you know. Yeah. The truth of the matter is, I'm a charming guy, but I'm not all that smart. These things are really very, very sharp, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
Very sharp. So, no, I was given a gift. Chris told me one of the reasons they, and he refers to God as the source, sometimes God. You know, source is a big one. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the source of everything. And I was given this task because I'm an unlikely, John St. Augustine, who I love, John says, he calls me the unwilling prophet, right? It was like you were just, you know, cast upon you. But he said, you know, Pop, Chris said, Pop, you're a good ambassador because you don't look like you believe in what you're talking about. And that helps other people, you know. You know, I'm not in flowing robes. You know, I don't have
ponytail and beads.
I couldn't grow a ponytail if you put a gun to my head.
Yeah, well, I mean? Yeah, look at
Neither
me.
Neither could you, buddy.
That's
you
right.
Know? Yeah. You know. I got to get a haircut. It's getting out of line right now.
I was going to mention something, but, you know.
Go ahead. Yeah. Oh, yeah, the hair. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
It's like, and I don't care about that either. You know what I mean?
That's envy.
I care about carrying a message. And if one person, as crazy as this sounds, Jim, if one person gets out of this podcast, you know, an avenue of relief or hope.
Yeah.
Then you and I did our job, you know. Saint, I don't quote the scripture very often, but, you know, Saint Paul said, I have run my race. I have been poured out like a libation, right? And I'll finish something like this. And I say, Chris, we did our job today, buddy. We did our job.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, that just about does it for part one of our episode with Joe McQuillan. Make sure you all come back for part two of episode 29 with Joe McQuillan that will be released next week. For now, like Billy Joel says, from the highs to the lows to the end of the show, this is the end of the show. Thank you again for being the best part of us. Catch you next time.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.